Thank you very much. I apologize for not having my paper fully written up. I will say that if you're enjoying the symposium, that will make up for it. One of the three people that were, one of the five, actually, that ended up putting it together, so that has taken most of my time in the last few weeks. I heard you say that you've not heard Origen talked about much in evangelical or Protestant theology, and it is true. The Catholics, even though he's officially named a heretic a couple of hundred years after he died, the Catholics have embraced Origen more and more in the last couple of centuries and in the last few decades especially. However, the evangelicals are also embracing many things about Origen, even though they're dancing away even further from some aspects of him. Origen is a figure that everybody knows and nobody knows, simply because he wrote so much. He's probably the most prolific Christian writer ever. 2,400 books he wrote, and during and those, the writing of those books was often by speaking rather than by actually writing. He would give his lectures, and his students would take down verbatim what he wrote, what he said, and they would release it as a manuscript. And thus, he was able to do 2,400 books. Having said that, that means that he has a rubber nose on a lot of topics. If you talk long enough on anything, you will disagree with yourself. And Origen is very good at that. One of the prime examples of Origen disagreeing with himself is the concept of universal salvation. A lot of people argue that Origen taught and believed universal salvation. This is one of the two major things he was condemned for in the 5th century and called a heretic long after he died, because he believed in the salvation of the devil. Having said that, there are many statements in his writings where he said there is no way that the devil could ever be saved. One in his commentary on Romans, where he's talking about the bringing back of Israel and the fall of Israel in Romans 11, he suggests that their fall is nothing like the fall of that ancient serpent, the devil. There's a fall from which there is no eventual return. The question is, how can that be justified as a strong statement when he has an equally strong statement in his John commentary, where he says there will be, at the end of time, absolutely no enemies of God. All will be restored. He also says in De Principiis, on First Principles, he has a number of statements where he says that all things will be restored, even the one who fell first. So you take those on the surface and you say they're diametrically opposed statements. He obviously is disagreeing with himself and is wrong one place or the other. However, there are some subtleties to Origen that have to be understood in order to understand his apparent contradictions. Not saying that we, when we get to the end of understanding his subtleties, might not still believe them to be contradictions, but I don't think he believed them to be contradictions. In this way, I will explain it. There's Mark Scott in the latest edition of the Journal of Early Christian Studies delves into universalism in Origen, and as well Robert Heine, who has translated a number of Origen's commentaries for the Fathers of the Church series, has delved deeply into Origen, and both of them say he does not see himself as contradicting himself in these ways. Now, a couple of people have said Origen isn't contradicting himself because these are statements that were slipped in by other authors when he was translated. And it is true that oftentimes we do not have Origen's actual words in Greek. He spoke and wrote in Greek, but oftentimes we only have him in Latin because many of his writings were destroyed and many of them were lost. However, there was a number of 5th century authors who were busy translating Origen into Latin so that he would be able to be continually available. Rufinus is the main one who is translating many books of Origen. He's the one who translated the book De Principiis, or On First Principle. And a number of Origen's commentaries are available to us in Latin because Jerome, when he was writing his Latin commentaries of much of Scripture, would take 85% of what he was writing straight from Origen, not, of course, giving credit for it. And so we can extract from Jerome's commentaries oftentimes most of Jerome's actual word, I mean, most of Origen's actual words, although they are, again, in Latin. So, did or did Origen not believe in the salvation of the devil and therefore universal salvation? Because they're both together. If he believes in the salvation of the devil, certainly God would figure out some way to save everyone else as well. Picture it like this. Origen can say there is no way that the devil could ever be saved as devil. But with enough changing fire, there could be a time when he is no longer the devil and therefore can be saved. So let me take you through six steps of the fall and the restoration or the apocatastasis as presented in the first three books of On First Principles by Origen. And you will understand what I mean then when I get to the end, when I talk about the similarity between Origen's insistence on total peace in the kingdom of God and Ellen White's insistence that in the final analysis, God's kingdom will be one pulse of harmony. They get there in very different ways, but they get to a similar requirement in God's kingdom. This is the beginning of all things before there was time for Origen. As a Platonist, he viewed that all the pre-existent souls that have been made before time or outside of time by God, this little circle is God, and these little circles on the outside are the pre-existing souls, were immortal. They precede the creation of all material things. Therefore, they are, in that time before there was timepieces, if you may talk about time before timepieces, like Plato does in the Timaeus, explaining that there was no time before there was planets and revolutions to keep time. Therefore, this was in eternity. There's eternity, and then there's time. Creation doesn't happen until step three. Okay, so here we have the eternal souls, pre-existent, all surrounding God, constantly looking in at God, contemplating God, and therefore in harmony with each other and with God. So we have here everything is as it should be in this situation. All is peace and harmony. However, at some point, one and then others of these became bored or curious or whatever, and they turned around. They stopped contemplating God. They looked outwards or to each other. And as they looked outward from God and stopped contemplating God, they were apart from the fire of God, very Platonic in his terminology here, apart from the fire of God, and therefore cooled and fell. They fell from the realm of light. They fell from the realm of fire. God's fire. And when they fell, they became evil, selfish, etc. And now we have a problem. We need to get them back up to this state. We need a schoolhouse in which they can learn to not like their new existence and to want to get back to God. So God created the earth and the cosmos as this schoolhouse of salvation. You'll recognize the Pauline term. Origen pictured that creation comes after the fall. Now, as Adventists, we also believe that in the Great Controversy, but not quite this way. Creation happened after the fall in that the fall of the devil was happening, in the temptation of the angels was happening before the creation of the world. Maybe even concerning the occasion of the creation of the world. But certainly not in the same way that Origen is presenting it here. So then all these souls are embodied, these fallen souls are embodied in the earth to live a life, to learn in this schoolhouse of salvation how to live according to the will and law of God. How to live a pious, godly life. And a background of this, of course, is in the Republic by Plato. You have a description of living life as a philosopher. And you have to, in order to be ready for the ascent of the soul to heaven at the end of life, you have to live three consecutive lives piously. In other words, you have to live as a philosopher three lifetimes in a row in order to be able to have the ascent of the soul. Now, when you get to some of others, Plato's writings, he's not quite that stringent, but it's a high bar to achieve. Not just one lifetime of goodness, but three. And Origen ascribes to that Platonic doctrine that it is a tough thing to achieve. It is very difficult to live the contemplative life on this planet. But its very difficulty is why it is going to be cleansing. Now, without intervention from outside, God saw that this would never take place. He would never get his souls back to the realm of light, to the realm of fire, the holy fire. And so, he sent the Logos down to this earth to live as a human in order to show the way. Now, one detail I'm going to add now, back to picture number one, is that one of these souls that was contemplating around God for eternity was the Logos, which was the only soul that did not fall. In Origen's theory as he presents it in On First Principles. This means that the Logos, who becomes then the Christ of the incarnation, is actually just like us. It's for eternity, but he never falls. Now, Origen says in the John commentary that if it were possible, using the optative mode in Greek, if it were possible that the Logos were ever to stop contemplating God, he would stop being God. Which clearly suggests that the Logos, in Origen's mind, is not God by nature, but is only God by participation in the Father's deity. As such, this is a very low Christology, and this is the second thing that Origen is condemned for hundreds of years later. He is condemned for being a person who, long after Arius, was Arian. So Origen lived before Arius, and he was condemned long after Arius for being Arian. That's a bit anachronistic, but it is still the situation. So, and it's because of this picture in De Principiis that he is condemned. So this Logos, then, who never fell, but remained participating in God's deity, comes down to earth, incarnating God in order to be able to show us the way to have the ascent of the soul. And so, the Christ lives a perfect life and demonstrates that it can be done and demonstrates how to do it, and then we are then to imitate it. Now, the question is, do we imitate it easily? Do we, by observing Christ, then immediately start imitating Christ in perfect life? No, and so it may take a long time. It may take many lifetimes. It may take tens of thousands of lifetimes. Origen is not concerned about how long it takes. Origen says, whatever it takes, however many lifetimes it takes, however many tries, eventually, all souls, including the devil and his angels, will make the ascent of the soul back to the realm of the fire of God and be once again surrounding God in one harmonious existence. Now, you say, Where is hell in all of this? The concept of hell is defended by Origen on a number of occasions. He defends the burning as both enlightening and purgative. And he uses his allegorical interpretation from a number of texts, including the response of the disciples on the road to Emmaus when they are through hearing what Christ had told them about his life and death and resurrection and showed it from the scriptures. And he says, they said, he quotes, "Did not our hearts burn within us?" And here he calls this the enlightening fire. God uses fire for enlightenment. It is the enlightening fire. But he also uses fire for punishment, which Origen argues is purgative. And so the fires of hell can last for a long time in Origen's situation. They could last for 10,000 lifetimes and go to hell afterwards and come back purged and start again. Fail again, go back to hell, come back, start again. However many times it takes in order to make the ascent of the soul to God and get back to God for the restoration. Now the restoration has to end up looking just like the beginning, with this one exception. We will have learned from the experience and therefore have a deeper understanding of God. Origen argues this is what keeps it from happening again. Now, Origen is pushed in the direction of universal salvation by his understanding of soul. His understanding of soul as preexistent puts his understanding of soul into the realm of immortal. Now, he argues in several places that no being at any time is not dependent upon God. And therefore, Rufinus and others said, see, he doesn't think that there's innate immortality in the soul. He's okay. But yet, he has effective immortality of the soul. He does not believe that there will be any actual eradication of soul. Therefore, effectively immortal. So, most people gloss it over and just say, Origen taught the immortality of the soul. Even though Origen himself might say, no, I want some caveats on that. He really does. And in De Principiis on First Principles, he portrays the immortality of the soul. But he also insists that there cannot be, at the end, the recapitulation, the apokatastasis, the time when he says, and his favorite text for this is Ephesians 1:23, where Christ will be the all in all and fill all. And if Christ is going to be the all in all and fill all, there can be no enemies. There can be no eternally burning hell with people in rebellion to God or in punishment by God or from God. That is not possible if Christ is going to be all in all, he says. So the restoration has to be complete. Since the soul is immortal, and since there will be peace in God's kingdom, there must be universal salvation. That's putting it bluntly for Origen. He would also want me to have several caveats on that, but I'm striking it down to the bare minimums. That is very far from Adventist theology. Or is it? In the great controversy theme, we have the understanding of a fall of beings that existed around God before the creation of the world. Now, we don't call them souls, we call them angels. Are they eternal? Are they immortal? They're certainly beyond us, but we do not say they have immortality. They have something beyond us, and they certainly live a long time, but they are, in Origen's words, always dependent upon God. However, we believe that even though something can live forever, it can also be dismantled. We introduce the concept of annihilation. But you can see how the fall before and then the ascent of Jesus. Now, most Adventists have a much stronger Christology than this. most Adventists have fought the war of who is Christ, and we went through this battle in Adventism over about 40 years, and ended up saying strongly, along with Ellen White in The Desire of Ages, that Christ was always God. And is God effectively by substance, not just participation. So we have a much stronger Christology in Adventism. Having said that, there's a number of Adventists that have a much weaker Christology. But by and large, most Adventists are not Trinitarian. They have full understanding of Christ being of the same substance with the Father, and therefore being eternal God. Eternal very God is a statement that Ellen White makes. Okay? And we do believe in the incarnation, most strongly, that Christ actually became a human being and actually lived on this world as a human and did show us the way, lived the perfect life as both our substitute and example. And we do believe that we will all end up with God, at least everybody that's left. But our view of hell is very different than Origins. We don't see hell as something that's happening continually and is purgative. We see hell as consuming. Therein lies the major difference. We believe in annihilation. Therefore, any soul or any person who insists on keeping their rebellion against God will be mercifully annihilated so they do not have to live forever in contention with God. But the end result, well, we don't view it like this. We view a lot more embodiment than Origen does. This is closer to the floating in a cloud, in enjoying God's presence. And we think more in terms of conceptually building houses and inhabiting planets and traveling around and doing things and learning. We have a much more bodily view of heaven, certainly, than Origen did. And in fact, we argue that it's coming back to this earth. Eternity is going to be coming back to this earth and staying forever. So there's significant differences. But the way we deal with evil is very similar. We do not accept that there can be evil in existence forever, either before the creation or after the final judgment of God. So Ellen White's terminology of all will be one pulse of harmony is very similar in its appearance to Origen's intent when he says that Christ will be the all in all and the restoration will be complete. Getting there by very different methods, but both Origen and Ellen White showing that an eternally burning hell is not a possibility in a peaceful kingdom of God.